Welcome to Black Art is Lit. It is so good to connect with you again. I last recorded, it may have been at the very beginning of the COVID pandemic. I think I only got a chance to have one of those episodes done before things kind of went awry. So now we're coming out to the other side of that. And during this time, you know, I really thought about and wanting to expose you to as many of my favorite African-American artists as possible. How could I best do that? So what I want to do going forward is, with most books, I'll try and read about 2 chapters of them so that if you like it, you'll go out and buy the book. You can download it. You can audible it. We're in a digital world, so there's lots of ways that you can get those books that you like. So tonight, the book that I want to start with is actually Mignon, and it's by L.A. Banks. And I bought this book many years ago. I was actually in Port Authority, New York City, and I was coming over from Jersey, and I saw this gentleman, and he was selling incense and books. And I love both. So it's like, I'm down with that. And so I remember for many years, this book smelled like incense. And I loved it. And it's weird because that smell has long since faded. But every time I go to hold the book up to my nose, because I remember the smell. I smell it. I still smell those incense, and it takes me back to that time and that place and that space. And that's what some things do, especially when I look back over these books that I love. So again, this is Mignon. It is by one of my favorite authors, L.A. Banks. She is now deceased. But with Mignon, it says, all Damali Richards ever wanted to do was create music and bring it to the people. Now she is a spoken word artist and a top act for Warriors of Light Records. But come nightfall, she hunts vampires and demons, predators that people tend to dismiss as myth or fantasy. But Damali and her guardian team cannot afford such delusions, especially now when a group of rogue vampires have been killing the artists of Warriors of Light and their rival, Blood Music. Strange attacks have also erupted within the club drug trafficking network and drawn the attention of the police. But these killings are a bit out of the ordinary, even for vampires. No neat puncture marks in the neck to show where the life's blood has been drained from the body. Instead, these bodies have been mutilated beyond recognition, indicating a bloodlust and thirst for destruction that surpasses any Damali has encountered before. Damali soon discovers that behind these brutal murders is the most powerful vampire she's ever met, and this seductive beast is coming for her next. But his unholy intentions have also drawn the focus of other hellish dark forces. Soon, Damali finds herself being pulled deep into the vast and horrifying vampire world. And just because it's my favorite author, you know, she wrote this dedication and special acknowledgments where she says, this book is dedicated to those people who believe in things unseen and have walked by faith for so long that it's second nature. All of us know the elders who have had that unshakable belief that there's a spiritual plane. And without those individuals holding the line, who knows what shape this world would be in? And yet, while predators come in all forms and have besieged our communities on many levels, there still seems to be a force that keeps a total eclipse of the light at bay. These elders teach, impart quiet wisdom, and ready another generation to take the baton as they pass it. On the surface, it may appear that the battle is a hopeless cause, and that there are no young, strong replacements. One could easily buy into the illusion that all is lost. Not so. Because there are so many young warriors out there whose names we have yet to learn, and so many old guardians still keeping the lantern lit. Some say it's myth, others call it legend, but I have seen these people moving in mysterious ways. Therefore, do not believe in the smallness of things, believe in the light within. In his inauguration speech, Nelson Mandela said it best. Our worst fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. Keep your lights on. So, Mignon. Prologue, 20 years ago in New Orleans. Sarah Richards stood in the middle of her bedroom trying to console her infant, who was wailing at the top of her tiny lungs. Yes, she knew what pain was and wanted to cry out as much as her baby was carrying on right now. Instead, silent tears slid down the sides of her face as she turned her chin up to the ceiling and shut her eyes. How, Lord, was a preacher's wife supposed to deal with the fact that her husband was having an affair? For months, she had denied the obvious. But now, her husband's lies regarding his whereabouts had been found out. He had even violated the sanctity of their home by bringing this woman to their bed, their marital bed. Evidence in the form of the marriage violator's perfume and blood still clung to the sheets. She'd only been gone an hour on a church errand her husband had contrived for her to do. 1 hour, and now this? Sarah covered her mouth and turned away, hastening from the sight and stench of the filth taking her baby girl to lay her in a crib. With her hands trembling, she left the screaming infant whose wails intensified as she turned away from her. Shame burned through her. How could she call the church elders or talk to Mother Stone about something like this? How did a preacher's wife, the first lady of the church, force her lips to say that her husband, the Reverend Richards, had lost his natural black mind? Amid the now hiccuping bleats from the nursery, Sarah became very still as she heard movement in a small clapboard house below her. There were two voices, one soft, seductive. The other was that of her husband. He brought this whore back to his home again? Once was not enough? Did he think she was so foolish as to run another church errand to an elderly neighbor at night again so he could be doing God knows what? Couldn't he hear his own child screaming her lungs out? And wouldn't he know that his wife was upstairs? Did he have so little respect for her? Was it that this whore's pull was that strong? Tears of bitter rage and hurt stung Sarah's eyes. The pain of her acknowledgement almost crushing her rib cage as the muscles around her heart constricted. This woman, this transgressor, had a hold on her husband that not even the Lord could seem to break, because Father God knew she prayed on it from the first inkling of doubt. Now, her husband had brought a violator back into his house, her house. A home designed for a minister, his wife, and children across the street from hallowed ground. Sarah felt her knees begin to buckle as she envisioned the faces of loyal parishioners who hung on the good reverend's every word, just as she once had. This house was not a home, nor was it a place where she or her child could find peace. She resisted her first instinct, which was to barrel downstairs to confront her husband and the heifer that had crossed her threshold. But something slithered inside Sarah's soul and gave her pause. The green-eyed monster raised its ugly head. She had to know what this hussy looked like. Who was this woman that could break up hearth and home using something that all women had? She wanted to spy and know the things her husband said to this homewrecker. What lies had Armand Richards told? Silently, like a thief in the night, Sarah Richards crept down the hall, hugging the wall. She knew this house by heart and easily avoided the creaky floorboards. Stretching her body, she clung to the very paint as she peered around the corner of the landing. The baby's cries escalated, her pulse rising along with it. She held her breath as she rounded the corner and froze. A tall, handsome, male figure, the color of cafe a lot, and dressed in an impeccable black suit, ran a palm across her husband's jaw. The caress was sensuality personified. The sight stole the scream from Sarah's lungs as her husband closed his eyes and dropped his head back in a display of sheer feminine submission. She took the stairs one by one, clutching the handrail to keep from passing out. She couldn't breathe as she watched in abject horror while this man, a man, not a woman, embraced her husband like a lover and lowered his eyes to Armand's exposed throat. When she heard her husband groan, something fragile within her snapped. Everything became a blur. Her feet flew down the stairs. Her screams outstripped her infant's daughters. The words became a chant. God, no, not that. She would crucify this beast, the founder of her household. There was no rational thought as she hurled herself forward, trying to grab hold of his broad shoulders. She wanted blood, a pound of flesh. But the agile intruder simply swept her husband up in his arms as though he were sweeping away his bride and deftly slipped through the door with him. Sarah gave chase into the front yard, screaming, crying, hollering behind them. But only the night heard her. She spun in a crazed circle, searching the darkness for them. Where had this lover taken her husband? And so quickly, Sarah fell to her knees in the gravel driveway. The stones cut through her nightgown and pierced her knees. Bloodied, she lay outstretched, sobbing, a futile prayer. A man? It was a man, dear God in heaven, no. A man, gorgeous, with jet black penetrating eyes, a regal carriage, flawless skin, thick black lashes, honest curls that would shame any woman. A man, please no. A man that stood 6'2" with a solid frame and strong enough to lift her husband as if Ahmad was a baby. No. She heaved and vomited, wiped her mouth and clawed the dirt until she could push herself upright. She stared up at the sky and then at the lit window of her daughter's room. Sarah walked slowly back to the house and reached for the telephone. The church matriarch should send her daughter, Marlene, to look after the baby tonight, she heard her inner voice say. Marlene was good with infants. She was a nice young woman. Right now, Sarah Richards had an errand to run. One that she put off all these months. She needed something more than prayer. Her husband was with a man, and the church elders didn't know nothing about a pain like that. The old lady who lived on the edge of the swamps had potions and such to correct these kind of abominations. And what Sarah would tell her would stay between her and the old witch. For 3 days, Sarah sat at the living room window as the church elders held their prayer vigil at her home. Young Marlene had brought them with her when Sarah had hysterically called for a babysitter at that odd hour of the night and had told the girl that her husband was gone. What else had she expected? One didn't call at that hour and think the girl wouldn't have to explain things to a mother who would then call in church reinforcements, not when there was a problem at the church head's house. But desperation had kept Sarah from thinking things through that far. If they thought she'd just run off, fine. That had been enough for the old folks to mount a prayer posse. Minister was nowhere to be found. His wife and child had been abandoned. Evil was at work. That was all Sarah would say on the matter. She slept in a parlor chair while she struggled with her plan, unable to ever go back to her own bed, unable to even lie down on the couch. She refused to eat. Barely took a sip of water, didn't move, just stared. Who knew what other piece of furniture had been violated within her home? Each day that passed, the black bag she had hidden in the pantry issued a more urgent call for her to take matters into her own hands. Yet to do so would be a death of all she had been brought up to believe in. It would be flying directly in the face of the Lord. 3 days and three long nights, Sarah pondered the seductive choice. She quietly thanked the praying people that had descended upon her house, never saying so out loud, just in her mind. Their eyes remained lowered, and she appreciated their discretion. And she said a prayer of thanks that young Marlene Stone was taking such good care of her child while her nerves took leave. Sarah Richards knew that she had checked out of life. Her eyes simply watched a point of nothing beyond the window. But on this third night, she also knew what she had to do. The elders, for all their prayers, didn't know where her husband's car had disappeared to or where the good reverend was, for that matter. But the old seer had spoken of a mansion, a plantation, had given her directions and landmarks to follow, and she would arm herself with her spell and a butcher knife to right this wrong as the sun set, just as the witch had advised. Without a word, Sarah stood in fiend illness, leaving the prayer warriors who had murmured without relent since the night she'd seen too much. Sarah went to the bathroom and splashed water on her face, then snuck into the pantry to collect her bag that had been secretly readied. In her bare feet and robe, she slipped from the house and into the night without a sound. She was going to fetch back her husband, or die trying. Sarah stood in the center of a circle of weeping willows with tears streaming down her cheeks and stared at the expansive estate. Elaborate ironwork graced the veranda that rimmed the entire second floor of the mansion. Tall white columns created a formidable entrance to the place she dared to go. Spanish moss billowed from the trees and nary a cricket sounded. Her husband's car was in the driveway just as the old woman had prophesied. Sarah's hand clutched the satchel and her feet never consulted her brain as she moved forward, rounding the mansion to the back door that was surprisingly unlocked. The mansion was eerily quiet as she slipped into the darkness within. Money, power. What riches had been promised her husband by this wealthy perversion of a lover, she wondered. How could a man she loved with all her heart and soul do this to her? How could he live such a lie, allow her to bear a child for him? How could he do this to his baby girl? New tears replenished the salty stream that had dried on Sarah's face. She loved Armand Richards since they were children and had never known any other man in the world but him. Her footsteps took her through the house, each room making her walk more quickly as she saw sumptuous wealth, but not her husband. She hurried up the winding staircase toward the upper levels of the mansion, listening intently for the sounds of her husband in the throes of passion, but heard nothing. Every well-appointed room was vacant. The seer had been wrong. Ahmad was not here. But it was clear that her husband had been here at one time. Perhaps he and his man friend were out on the town or secluded in another love nest. Sarah's mind took a sinister turn. She squeezed her eyes shut as she saw them naked together. Bile rose within her throat as images of her husband with his seductive man lacerated her spirit. No, this had to be fixed. This was the only way. The opportunity their absence provided was perfect. She would do what she had to do. Go into the wine cellar, the base of the house, and cast a spell. Sarah covered her heart and said a prayer for her child and asked for forgiveness. She knew her prescription was wrong as she tiptoed down the long hallway, found the stairs, and descended to the first floor. The long walk gave her time to explain with contrition that she had to do something. Could not just sit and wait for this to be made right. All she asked was that Father God would understand and spare her baby girl, despite what it said in the good book about soothsayers and spellcasters, or taking matters into one's hand. This was a special case, and he had to understand her desperation. Her bare feet stung with the cuts and abrasions she sustained from walking crazed through the woods, over bramble, across driveway gravel for 5 miles in the dark. The bag of black magic weighed heavily in her hand as she shifted the bulk of it onto her hip, extracted a black candle and a small box of stick matches, lit the candle, then clumsily stowed away the matches and resumed her slow descent down the dark cavern of the first level of the mansion. Slick stone walls reflected the light from the sputtering flame, and the coolness of the room belied the humidity that made her summer robe and gown cling to her skin. Perspiration due to her shattered nerves seeped from her pores, sending a riveting, adrenaline-filled sweat between her breasts and down her back. Undaunted, she began making a circle in the dirt, using the butcher knife to carve the strange star shape that the old woman had drawn for her on a crumpled piece of paper. Sarah's lip moved with purpose as she opened the mason jar and splashed blood from the gutted rooster upon each point of the star. And as she set each black candle in place and closed her eyes, constantly murmuring, the floor began to move. Immediately, plumes of thick yellowish smoke rose, choking her in a sulfury, blackening haze. The rack of wine bottles on the wall began to explode, sending shards of glass to cover her. Splinters from flying wood and glass cut into her skin like sharpenail. A scream choked by spit, terror, and smoke was torn from her throat as she ran and huddled in a corner against the wall. And he could not believe his good fortune. Fallon Newt contained his amusement as his strategy took root. Providence of his magnitude couldn't have conjured by the highest sorceress of old. A fluke. A variable. a tiny rip in the fabric of supernatural law, all caused by a frightened but foolish woman. Jealousy had ironically released a green-eyed monster within her, along with another more dangerous entity that the poor human creature obviously hadn't anticipated. Nora had the vampire council. Pity. A gross oversight. They couldn't keep him incarcerated for a violation of their staunch, outdated high council rules as they had planned. There were things that even vampires frowned upon. Then again, there was this variable called luck. You have inadvertently been summoned to my lair, Newt groaned in a seductive tone toward the demon that arose with him from the billowing cloud of smoke. I was called, yes, that gives me the right. No, Newt replied with a lethal warning between his teeth. You have no rights, but you do have the misfortune to be a demon trapped in a master vampire's lair. Two formidable adversaries stared at each other for a moment. The snake-like creature appeared stunned and outraged. However, when it offered no rebuttal, Newt pressed on. His hunger for the fresh taste of blood, stroked by the scent of the frail female human trying to hide herself in the corner of his wine cellar, notwithstanding. Cohabitation without cooperation is not an option. Newt studied his manicured nails and sighed. Do remember that I am of the more evolved order of the Dark Realms and now freed. I can make existence for you here torturous, but I am a man of reason. The demon looked at him and then glanced at the cowering woman on the floor. We could come to terms. Fair exchange is no robbery. Fallon Newt threw his head back and laughed. Indeed. So that was the intro, and we're not even to chapter one. So if you like that, then what I would say is to tune in for the next one. Thanks.